So yes, I'd like to call the October 2nd, 2024 Committee of Law Enforcement and Public Safety meeting to order. Can you rise for the pledge, please? Roll call, please.
Chair Hansett.
Present.
Deputy Chair Hewitt. Legislator Clinton.
Here.
Legislator Maloney.
Here.
Legislator McCullough. And Legislator Wolf.
Here.
I'd like to get approval of the October 15th, 2020. I don't think that date is correct. So I'd like to get approval of the September 4th regular meeting minutes. Any discussion or questions? Motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion.
Clinton, second?
I'll second.
Walls, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. Please note that Legislator Hewitt and Legislator McClellan are now present. Okay, we're going to start off with our law enforcement department head updates, and we will start with Sheriff Figueroa.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. Just a couple of quick notes. If you need to use the bathroom, it's on the left-hand side. If you walk out the door, if there's a fire alarm goes off, you can go exit right or exit left. Just a couple of thoughts. I'm going to turn it over to the newspaper and the director of community incarceration services.
Hello, everyone. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to also be here with Lieutenant Chad Story, my associate director. And I oversee the Division of Community and Incarcerated Services. Under our division, we have all of the crisis intervention teams. So that is Oracle, which is our overhead response team, our anti-violence team of VERT, SAFE, which is our mental health response team. And we also have Officer Wellness, as well as programming in the jail, including medical services and medical programming in the jail. So that all falls under our purview. So to date, I'm happy to report that our overdoses, I'm sure you've heard nationally that overdoses are down. I think they said 10%. We're looking at 32.6% of reported overdose calls are down. Can I say it that way? Because naloxone is out there, so people are not necessarily calling, but they're living. And so that's what that means. We also have 36.6% of our fatalities are down in the county. That is huge. So our opioid fatalities are down. We do believe that the combination of the work that we've been doing as a community as a whole, as well as the work that we've been doing internally to connect individuals to the life-saving medication, naloxone, as well as connecting them to services, treatment, and you know, other sources that are going to provide support, including social support, so housing in some cases and food, and just breaking down barriers. So with that said, we also launched our SAFE program. I only have 2 minutes, so I can't go into much, but that has been a very successful launch. Right now, our social worker on the team has served, and she has about 20 referrals that have come from officers. Most of the cases are individuals who have encountered law enforcement multiple times and just very clearly need help and have not necessarily been connected to help prior. So it's been really successful, and just want to thank all of you for all of the support that you've given us in our division. And I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Chad, anything else?
Just want to speak about the resolution on the trailer real quick. back when Sheriff Figueroa first got elected, we started our Oracle team, and part of that was community outreach and education. We were able to secure our Oracle trailer through some donations from loved ones who had lost somebody to overdose, and it was really successful. We got out there in the community. We were out there for the fair and for all kinds of events, and just two real quick stories about the trailer. At the fair a couple years ago, we trained some of the staff there in Narcan use, and they were able to save lives during that week. So I just wanted to throw that out there as far as the resolution that you'll be voting on tonight and the importance of that trailer in community outreach. We also plan on expanding the use of the trailer, not only for Oracle, but for our other CIT teams. The one example I can give is our social worker with the state team has been working at the Kingston Hotel with a bunch of clients up there, and there's no space for them. So the trailer is one way that we're going to give her some office space, temporary basis while being up there. Thank you.
It'll be a place for linkage and connection to other service providers as well. So it will be a community outreach hub, really.
Anything else from? Okay, thank you. Next up is District Attorney's Office, Saj Ahmed.
Thank you, Chair. At the DA's office, the DA couldn't be here, unfortunately, and neither could Chief Kamoni Mills, but just as an update for the month, obviously, we're going to speak about our new space. That was a big news piece that I'll reserve for when we have time on the resolution. September was obviously a very busy month. We just this week had an important sentencing on the Carolus homicide yesterday. He was sentenced to 29 years. Obviously, it's important for the entire community and county because of the other types of issues that he was involved with, including the illegal dumping and the water issues that are going on in Woodstock, which is something that has been referred to this office. In addition to that, we have some really interesting things and good things coming up. It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We have staff members that will be participating in the Domestic Violence Forum. I'm blanking on the date. I believe it's October 22nd. I'll look it up and reconfirm it, and it'll be sent out to you. Chief Kamoni Mills, as well as one of our DV investigators, will be among the panelists. We have an exciting international visit for our intimate partner violence intervention team from Sweden. Our national network partners through John Jay College have been working with these Swedish partners for the past few years. When I was part of the IPVI team, that's kind of when it started, and they will be visiting us the week of October 14th. We will extend some invitations to the legislature to also meet with them. It's kind of an interesting part of the job when you get to meet people in other countries that are doing similar work. And last but not least, I want to end on a really high note. Earlier this year, we applied for a grant. We partnered with the Sheriff's Office. We partnered with the Village of Ellenville Police Department, Family of Woodstock, and it's for cyber crimes in connection to domestic violence, and it's specifically geared towards our rural areas. So Ellenville, Wawarzang, Town of Rochester, and we'll be piloting some programs, and we'll be getting $500,000 over, I believe it's 3 or 4 years. I just got this news. Thank you, Juanita. And I just have to share that we applied for this grant at this meeting, and Juanita was sitting next to me and guiding me through the process because we hit this barrier at the last minute, and we were sitting in the Restorative Justice Center during one of the Law Enforcement Committee meetings to get that in. So it was a true team effort. This committee and the full legislature also approved one of the pieces necessary for the grant in the spring, and I'm really excited to unveil it. Usually a lot of the press releases I write are just sad and horrible, but I'm really looking forward to writing this one. So that's kind of some of the information about what's been going on at the DA's office.
Congratulations.
Probation Department, Dana Ryan.
Hi, everybody.
Valerie Nacarato couldn't be here tonight. She's under the weather, so I'm representing. You know, coming after that, I can't say that I have a lot to report other than, you know, doing the regular work that we do. But, you know, I'll also report on the Restorative Justice Center, and we're holding more programming and community events in the center for the community, as we should be. And that's about all.
Thank you. From Emergency Management, we have Deputy Director and Fire Coordinator Daphne.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you. I am also here in place of our director this evening, who couldn't make it. I'll touch on some projects that we've got going on within the department. Each division's been really busy the last few months. I'll start with fire services, which I oversee, and we'll be holding elected officials training once again. This was done, I want to say, in 2017 or 18. It was a good turnout then. We're looking to have a good turnout again this year. We'll do four-hour sessions from 8 to noon each session. The dates are October 15th, 29th, November 7th, and November 21st. Each day will be a different topic. One day will be devoted to law enforcement. One day is fire services. We'll even do some live burn training and some auto extrication training. Get your hands dirty. And it's open to county elected officials as well as local municipalities. So those should be four fun days coming up. Division of Emergency Communications, they have three new dispatchers in training currently. They've been on employees for about 5 months now. They're coming off training within this month. So I'll give them three new staff members. Also one additional one being hired in November, which will bring their staffing levels up to where they're trying to get. Deputy Director Madison, who's the County Emergency Manager, is currently on deployment with the New York State Department of Homeland Security and their incident management team down in Asheville, North Carolina. We've been in texting contact pretty much every day. He's witnessed some pretty rough conditions due to the flooding and tropical Hurricane Helene down there. So we wish him a safe deployment and hope he returns shortly. And then just one last thing, actually, we'll go back to fire services. Next week is Fire Prevention Week, so many of our fire departments will be out and about going to schools and daycares and teaching the little ones about fire safety. So if you have a chance to check out any of your fire department events, I recommend it.
And that's it for our updates. Thank you to everybody. And now we're the corrections. There's going to be a corrections presentation from Charles Tracuzzi.
Thank you.
Turn it over to him.
How you guys doing? Captain Charles Tracuzzi, I'm the assistant warden, sheriff's officer, jail. I'm going to give everybody a quick background. The sheriff came to us and asked if we'd be interested in doing a staffing analysis, working with the NIC. The last staffing analysis we got was in 2012-13 from the Commission of Corrections. There was a report that was put out, I would say early 2021-ish, 22, questioning why we need so many officers because we have so many less inmates than what we used to have, incarcerated individuals. So the sheriff got in touch with NIC, asked us to be a part of the staffing analysis class. So we did it. It took about 3 to 4 months. Me, the major, a couple of staff members inside the jail. We put together a report, and oddly enough, the numbers we came up with were exactly the numbers that the commission came up with 10 years ago. I put it together a real quick PowerPoint. I know you guys, you know, I've been here for a long time, so I don't want to bore you guys with this. If you guys have any questions during this, just shout them out to me. It'll be a lot funner. This is super boring stuff.
So you were trained how to.
So we trained.
But then this is your numbers, what you're showing us. This
correct.
This was not the team.
There's an NIC. So there's formulations how to come up with certain numbers. I have some some paperwork up here that you see that we imported to the PowerPoint. You'll be able to look at and we can talk about that when we get to it if you want.
Are there firms that do that that will come in and do this kinds of thing? Will anyone else, even if it's a government agency, come in and do it? Because normally you don't do a report on an independent look would be what I'm looking for,
right.
Not for the jail to say, yep, we've been doing everything perfect,
right.
Which is what we're about to do.
The commission usually does these.
Yes.
And they have, but we've asked for them to do it, and they were inundated with counties requesting new staffing analysis when the HALT Act came out. When COVID happened and we were releasing, large groups of incarcerated at a time.
I'd like to add, the Nero group is a group that's been dealing with the Assembly and the Senate, the State Assembly and the State Senate, regarding staffing analysis throughout the state. And one of the recommendations were that the sheriffs do an NIC staffing analysis every year. And so that's what the NIC is, the National Institute of Corrections. And so this was trying to get ahead and listening to what the Vera group was recommending. And so that's why, and it's not easy to get assigned from NIC. They only have 4 to 5 jails a year that they'll train to do, and we were lucky enough to be one of them.
So just quick history, we opened up in 2007. Before HALT and COVID, our normal numbers were around 350. We got as low as after COVID and HALT Act were implemented, we were down to as low as 99. And that's kind of when the question started to happen. Why do we need so much staff for such a small amount of inmates compared to what we had prior? We house, this was actually made prior to when we started to do cap court, but now we house not only sentenced and pre-sentenced individuals, but also pre-rated individuals. And those range from violations to felonies, violent problems. Inside the facility, we have 11 housing units. They can house up to 60. Some of them house up to 60. We have dormitories that house 24. We have an infirmary, which we could house 15. We also have a fully functioning kitchen that provides all the food for the incarcerated and the staff that are working. Laundry facilities downstairs. We have incarcerated individuals that work. They collect the laundry from inside the jail housing units. They bring it downstairs. They do the laundry in the gym. Obviously, officers are assigned to watch us on incarcerated. We have a full warehouse downstairs. Transportation, we do every doctor run for every incarcerated individual. We send it to court every day when they get transferred to another facility, whether it be state or a different facility within the state. We do those. Educational programs. We started the Ignite program. Sheriff, thank you for that, sir. which also costs more manpower, but it's definitely worth it when you look at the outcome with incarcerated. We just had our first graduation, and we had the coverage unit inside the facility. We were doing financial literacy, resume building, GED programs. We're doing a lot of programs in the incarcerated, which also takes a minute. So this is demographics for inside the facility at the time we did this study. A large percentage you'll see, age 26 to 40. Statistics show when you start getting older, you're going to do more medical. So with that, we spoke about transports. Like I said, we take everybody, we go to the heart doctors, we go to oral surgeons, we do everything that they need medically. We either inside, or if we can't do it inside, then we bring them out. And you see, we have a very small population that are over 58.
What's the furthest you go for better medical?
I'm sorry.
What's the furthest you go for medical?
We go to Westchester. Okay. We go to Albany. Yeah, we travel throughout the state. Wherever they'll take us, we go.
Okay.
So that's also, they have to be willing to take the incarcerated individual. It's not easy for a doctor's office wanting to bring somebody that's incarcerated within those facilities. That's our gender demographic. So obviously we have a large percentage of males. But we do have females, and with that comes an issue with getting female officers within the jail because we, you know, we have to do searches. We house females. Constant supervisions have to be the same gender. So there's an issue with getting females inside the jail also.
Do we, Charlie, do we ever end up short female officers where we end up having to have male officers doing
so,
things we prefer female officers?
No, so no, we will mandate female to work the next shift. We don't run short female officers. So yeah, so if we don't have any of the next shift, then one of the officers will have to stay in the prior shift. So this is the census. So I don't know why when I painted this the month of jump, but this is actually from July 23 every month to July 24. We've been running pretty steady right around 200 lately, up and down, right around 200. Like I said, we were down as low as 99 in 2021, and we're working our way back up. The problem with what happened with COVID and Vault Act is we released all these individuals, and they weren't remanding them to the jail, but eventually they're going to go to court and they're going to get sentenced, and that's what's happening now. They're seeing all those things, all the things people were arrested for prior that they weren't being remanded to jail for any other reason.
Just one quick question. So this is the data coming out of DCJS, right?
Yes.
So this data won't capture your individual coming in for CAP for pre-arraignment.
No, they're not. We do have that. We're up to roughly, what did we say, 300?
We're over
300 now. We started in June. So...
Right, so that's
gonna,
I'm saying that's
going to
show up in your month's account.
Yeah, no.
And CAP Court adds, what, 2 officers a day, basically, or what?
Yes, we have one deputy that brings the individual to the actual courtroom, and then we have an officer, a correction officer housed in the reception.
One robe, one
correction.
And that's every day?
And then an officer to escort also.
And that's morning and evening?
Correct. It's 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. every day, 7 days a week.
Is that
every holiday?
A lot of even more overtime due to CAP work, would you say?
Yeah, a lot of people are volunteering because it's only a couple hours, so we get a lot of people volunteering. It's not full shift. So, but yes, I mean, it's more manpower.
Yep.
So during the staffing analysis with NIC, they wanted us to chart out all the activities that we do within the day. So this is pretty much how it comes out to be. You'll notice we don't do anything on A-line, which is overnights from midnight to 8 o'clock, except for like cleaning details. Everything else that you see, you'll notice that they're either the day shift hours or the evening hours. And we haven't pretty separated out where it's even. So we're not using a whole ton of manpower on one shift and not the other. Any questions about them? It's pretty straightforward. So these are stakeholders. I'm not going to go through them because you're pretty much in the room talking about it now. So with staffing issues, you know, you're going to have problems not having enough staff. I mean, I'm not going to go through each one of these. This is kind of fluff I put in here for everybody. But obviously, it's overtime. That's what happens. People get mandated every day here. And then it becomes more dangerous for the jail. When people are tired, when they've already been here 16 hours and they're going to come back the next day, not knowing if they're going to leave the next day after 8 hours or maybe 16 hours again, you know, it becomes more dangerous for the staff and for the incarcerated. So there's a little bit about the HALT Act. As everybody knows about the HALT Act in here, Humane Alternative for long-term solitary confinement. With that, again, it causes some manpower issues because the programs that we have to institute when we utilize HALT. It also becomes a problem for the officers inside the facility because these individuals in there know that there's certain things that we can't do anymore. Like we can no longer lock incarcerated individuals in for longer than 17 hours a day. So they have to be out for an entire shift during the day. So for instance, an incarcerated individual can stab an officer in the face and then at 8 o'clock in the morning and then be out of their cell at 4 o'clock in the evening that same day. So there's some challenges that come along with the whole back. There's nothing we can do about that. It's the law. It's, you know, what's that?
Is that a state or a federal act?
I know state. I know a state in New York, though.
Thank you.
So, no. already talked about that. So these are the numbers that we talked about. So like I said, when we had the commission of corrections in, they did their staffing analysis. They came up with 159 officers. That's with relief factor. So you're taking into consideration people's days off, 2 days a week, how many times they call in sick on average, people that are on 207C injured out of work, people that are on FMLA, vacation days, all those factors go into it. Put all those numbers in, and it gives you how many extra people you need to supply for that facility to run. And we can move 159. So these are the posts that we run inside the facility. I know it's a little odd. So this is what we talk about, coverage factor. All these ones that just have a one and there's nothing next to them, that means they don't have to be backfilled. All these numbers here that are have odd numbers, like for instance, transportation officer, that's actually a six. Well, with coverage factor, taking into consideration all those people that you need to backfill, it comes out to be 14. That's six in the morning and six in the so six on D line, day shift, and then six on C line in the evening. So you need two additional officers to cover those people for being there. I know it looks super weird here. But at the end of the day, we got 159 officers, which is the exact same number we got to the job. So some plans to get some people in here. You guys can help out with this, offer competitive salaries. We've been hosting recruitment events all over the place. We go to colleges, we go to the fairs, we go everywhere. Everybody that'll take us, we go to try to get people in. Offer incentive programs, collaborate with local educational institutions like UP and then Community View. Thank you for that one. And that's it. That's all I got. Any questions? No? Perfect.
You do exit interviews when an officer leaves. What's the number one thing you hear? Is it money? Mandates and money?
They usually just say they found something different. We usually don't get complaints about supervision. We usually get complaints about policy. It's usually they don't say that because of the hours or money, but they just said they found something different.
You said you have 11 units and 31 vacancies?
No, we actually have 37
now. Is it possible to shut any units down, or are they required to always be open?
We actually have two units shut down right now. We already have a unit shut down.
Two of the 11?
Correct.
Sorry, thank you.
Explain that, because I don't think you shut down a unit. What does that mean?
Well, that means the incarcerated will go to a different unit, and it may, you know, we've seen inside the facility that when you get around 30 incarcerated inside of a HAZ unit, issues start happening. If you start getting a lot of grievances, incidents, fights between incarcerated, assaults against staff, if you start seeing them, you probably know. When you start hitting the circle, and it's around 30, come over grabbing you, correct?
When an officer calls, you're always out of sick. What's the minimum amount of time they have to give you?
2 hours.
Two hours?
2 hours prior to the show for bonds.
And that's probably the reason why sometimes you have shortages, because 2 hours only.
But you're short anyways.
Yeah.
That's not the reason we're short.
But
that's the reason we may be more short.
More short, yeah.
On that one shift.
The more reason why you're shorter. Yeah.
So we have 37
days. When it got down to 90-something, and we all knew it was going to come back. Initially, there was going to be a big drop, and it was going to work its way back up. But temporarily, why weren't more units shut down, or why couldn't you have done it
then? We consolidated. So there's a classification issue, right? Which I guess I should explain this a little bit. If you're not in corrections, it's kind of hard to understand. So there's a bunch of different reasons why certain individuals can't live together, right? So there's a classification. We have general classification. We have close custody. So it goes on a point system. So when somebody comes into the jail, we do an initial screening, and we do a classification on them, and that is included in your current charge, your criminal history, if you're escape risk, if you have any holes like for parole or any other warrants outside the jail, if you've been in jail and had other issues before, there's a whole bunch that goes into it. They spit out a number. If that number's over a certain amount, you go on close custody. So with that, we can't mix everybody, and then we have people that don't get along. Whether it's gang affiliations, whether they've had assaults, They've fought each other before, which, you know, we had a lot of reoffenders that come in. We said it doesn't, you know, see the same people coming in the community. So they've all been here together.
But even down in the 90s, it just coincidentally enough, there were still enough of these different classifications that couldn't be combined. So we were never able to lower our minimums even.
So that was just the one time, that was the February of 2020 when I went down to 90. It was right before the pandemic and right after bail reform. Bail reform was passed in 2019. It didn't take effect in 2020. However, the court started using the framework of the law in the summer of 2019. So 2020, we got down to 99, and even with the pandemic hit, the numbers started going up right after. I mean, we see people because you had a pre-existing medical condition and had them less than 3 months left in your sentence. The DA, the judge would agree to release these folks early because nobody knew what was coming with this pandemic. But that was only a short time frame when we had 99. We immediately started going up again to where we're at now, around 200.
So we talk about, so just real quick, they'll make up a little simpler. So, obviously, whether we have 8 inmates in a housing unit or 50 inmates in a housing unit, we still need almost a lot of these people, yep. Right? So, just taking into consideration, you have a female population that has 2 inmates. Right? We have close custody. They can't be missed in general. So, we try to keep 2 close custodies because if 2 guys are close custody, they don't get along. They have to be separated. So, we have 2 close custody housings. That's 3. Then we have a classification. That's 4. Then we have a trustee dorm, which is 5. Then we have general housing, which is a lot larger percentage of the population in close custody. So like I said, we all had 11 housing units. We already have 2 of those now, which means 9. I just counted you 7. And that's with taking nothing else into consideration.
How many officers you need per housing unit per day?
Well, you run 3 shifts with 1 officer in the housing unit. So if you have 60 inmates in a housing unit, we run 1 officer within those 60 units. Mm-hmm. If they're 60.
And with vacation and time off, you're looking at about 5 corrections
officers in our house. So 5. It comes out to be 5 officers you need in each housing unit. Questions, sir?
Thank you, Captain. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And that presentation will be emailed to all the listeners as well. Thank you very much. Alrighty. So we're going to start with our resolutions now. First one is Resolution 527, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $123,341 entered into by the County Family of Woodstock Department of Probation.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
Legislator Maloney.
Can somebody just give me a rundown of how this works? I do have some questions after I get kind of a summary.
Sure. We have a contract with Family in Woodstock to do the 180 program, which is for youth 7 to 17, so it's restored at Plant Circle. So if somebody has been harmed or in some way affected by the youth, instead of bringing them into the, you know, the formal criminal justice system, Family Woodstock does these circle to make all parties whole. And, you know, so the victim can actually have a say in the matter. Of course, they have to be amenable to doing that. But if it's family, school, et cetera, we use the circles.
Does family do so? I just want to make sure I'm talking about the same thing. Do we contract with family for any other restorative justice programs?
We do have restorative justice for adults, and that's referrals from the DA's office. So
this was a youth. This would be a youth thing.
No, this is, I believe, the only thing that we're contracting with.
Is this have anything to do with PINS?
It could be PINS.
Mm-hmm.
It could be.
But this is the one Family Woodstock contract we have that'll deal with youths that have been arrested.
It's usually pre-arrest, you know, like it's not usually arrest. It's for when youth do harm, but not necessarily arrest. If it's an arrest, it potentially could be a juvenile delinquent. So.
But if a youth is picked up for something.
Yeah, then say they have been smashing mailboxes or something, then we would reach out to, or family would stop, would, it's a whole process, there's referral, then they would reach out to the victims in offense like that and see if they're willing to do a restorative circle, and that would take place of any, if entering the system.
Do the youths and their family have an option not to take part?
They do, yeah.
Because that's what's troubling to me is I've had parents reach out recently and their son was arrested, not arrested, picked up for something quite minor. In fact, he may not even have broken the law. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was injured. And they're literally being harassed by family of Woodstock. I've talked to a former DA. I've talked to a former head of a public defender's office. Both of those conversations, they were quite disturbed by what they heard from these parents. I put the parents in contact with them. They were told on several occasions they have to. People are going to go over their house and enter their house to look around. They were told they have to be part of this program, that the only person that can not – they were told this today by a woman from Family Woodstock that only the county attorney can waive them from being a part of this. They have, this child has not read his Miranda rights. He's never been before a judge. It was the most minor of incidences. a lot of the people that have been a part of the two individuals I'm talking about, the public defender, both are concerned about this being about funding and getting bodies into this program. But this is not restorative justice, what's happening with this program right now. And I'd love to get somebody from Family Woodstock in here because these are documented conversations that I have between the parents the last couple of days, and this is problematic to me.
Yeah, that's not something that I've heard of. I don't know, Valerie, you know.
What sense does the DA's office recommend a child? Who makes that call? Probation makes the call?
So that's she's speaking to the youth program. We will make a referral to Restorative Ulster when a case meets criteria for the program. In the instance you're describing where no arrest has been made, we would have nothing to do with that at that point.
So why is a woman from Family Woodstock contacting them to be part of what sounds a lot like this program?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure about that. I think we'd have to get more information from that and follow up on it. Typically, my understanding is if a youth comes in for intake with us at the probation department, we do the juvenile intakes, mm-hmm. and it's during that period that we're making a determination, at what route we're going to take with that youth. And the majority of the times, we try to make sure that they don't go into the system and they don't have to go to family court. So we use restorative justice and 180 and the program to prevent the youth from going, if they really don't have to, into the family court system and in a diversion type situation. So I'm not sure why Family of Woodstock would be reaching out, and all parties,
Laughlin from your office is also intimating that it's mandatory that this family is part of this program. So I think we have an issue here.
Yeah, well, certainly we can.
Is it a woman over Family of Woodstock that?
Yeah.
That's who's been pretty aggressive with this family.
Okay. So if we can get more information on that, we most certainly could follow up on that. That's not a problem.
I never speak for my colleagues, but I myself am not comfortable going forward with this. I mean, the family I'm talking about is a local law enforcement family as well that just about everyone in this room knows. So this is not okay, what this program is doing right now. And it's got nothing to do with restorative justice. And I think Dana should probably be at the next meeting, and we should probably get into what is actually going on with this program.
Okay. No, I agree.
Any other questions? Discussion?
Can we postpone a month, Chair?
So.
To the next meeting and look into
it? What I'm doing is actually I'm reaching out to somebody about that. So can we come back to this one just so I can get some more information?
Can I just add that 116,000
is reimbursed by the Raise the Age grant. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, we're going to come back to that one if that's okay. So we're going to move on to Resolution 528, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to sign an intermunicipal agreement for the purpose of centralized arraignment court for CAP Court, Ulster County Sheriff. Sheriff?
So this is for centralized arraignment court. DEP, which is a large agency here in the county, wasn't part of the original agreement that the chair has assigned, the legislature has to approve. So we went back and forth on the MOU, county attorney reviewed it, came up with an agreement, and that's what this is.
Okay. Any discussion or questions? Okay. Can I get a motion to adopt the resolution?
McCullough.
Oh, second. Clinton. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Resolution 529, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $20,797.20, closing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county, Axon Enterprises, Inc., Ulster County Sheriff, Sheriff Figueroa.
These are five additional cameras for new members of the Sheriff's Office.
Okay, discussion or questions? Motion to adopt the resolution?
Make the motion.
Law, well, second. Clinton, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Yep, two opposed. Motion's carried. Mm-hmm. Resolution 530, establishing capital project number 710, Sheriff's Office Oracle Training Trailer Purchase, amending the 2024 Capital Fund Budget, Ulster County Chair.
Sure, I'd be happy. Like I said before, back in 2019, when the sheriff got elected, he developed our local program. Part of that was community outreach. I can't express to you how much of an importance this trailer has been as far as educating the community. Like I said, we're going to expand the use of the trailer to our other crisis intervention teams. Seeing the one example that I use for our new state team, having some office space when dealing with clients.
Okay, thank you. Just
stop your question. You said something about a donated trailer?
So our original trailer, which we're replacing because it's really on state road anymore, was donated via funds through the Sheriff's Foundation. And it was a used trailer that we bought back in 2019, 2020.
Any other questions or discussion? Motion to adopt the resolution.
The motion.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion. Oh, sorry.
I think I did the motion.
Resolution 531, establishing capital project number 707, purchase and acquisition of real property located at 9 and 15 Joyce Lane in the city of Kingston for the purpose of office space, amending the 2024 Capital Fund Budget, Department of Public Works, Buildings and Grounds. We're going to defer to the Med first.
Thank you. So, obviously, the DA is going to be here. We really wanted to. Being under one roof has been discussed for many, many years. It was part of his mission statement. The first time Deputy County Executive Capuano met with our office back in, I believe it was November of last year, the first thing that the DA did was bring her around our office at the courthouse, show her just in real time what an unworkable situation we've been in for many, many years, but that has become more pronounced by many of the issues. And in addition to that, the further carving out of our office that occurred back in 2020 and
2022 into 2023 when one of the Supreme Court judges' chambers took over probably half of our space at the courthouse. We then had to relocate to lease space in 273. So he really impressed upon the deputy county executive the urgency of the situation, even going so far as walking her over to the Sioni building and showing her that this was what he wanted. I looked at him and kind of in disbelief that he had done this and told him, no way are we going to get a new space. The space that he wants to house us all under one roof does not exist. I'm always the naysayer in the group, but I just want to read to you what is part of his mission statement as we present this resolution that I thought was impossible about 9 months ago. And we're so excited and grateful for the governmental collaboration that occurred to get this done. I'm so grateful to Chair Hansett, Chair Criswell, that just, and the county executive's office, that when 15 Joyce Lane became available for sale, they realized the opportunity it presented for public safety in Ulster County, for our office, but even more importantly than that, for the victims of crime that come to our office every day. Right now, our office is spread out over 5 different office locations, which includes this building. My first office, the DA's office, was here. And I'm very grateful to the chair for allowing us to be here, but it is not easy to work with a victim of domestic violence where you're letting them know that one of the consequences of them proceeding forward is, you know, your abuser is going to be housed over there at the Ulster County Jail. We just heard from the captain, the jail does good work, but, you know, when you're working with a victim in that moment, it's a very difficult thing to have them also come meet with you in the jail or at the jail. And similarly, we saw just this week that there are some safety concerns for members of the DA's office by being housed at the courthouse. We've been under construction for the past 3 years at the courthouse. There's been only one entrance and exit to the courthouse for most of this year. I know I personally have felt that pressure. The DA personally was threatened, and I'm very grateful to the sheriff's office for taking the measures, the safety measures that we needed. But we just saw that the defendants, and I'm referring specifically to People v. Dawkins, where the entire family of the defendants were, watchful of all the comings and goings of everyone in the office. So this building really represents a lot of opportunity. And I know that we have spoken so much about our needs, and it may sound like we're coming to this body repeatedly with our needs, but we're making some progress. I'm just going to read from the mission statement and turn it over to the Deputy County Executive to give you more information about the space. But the rigorous work of the DA's office is being carried out by people in at least 5 different buildings miles away from each other. This means that some employees of the DA's office have never met each other, and the true learning by osmosis, which occurs in professional settings, is almost non-existent for new and inexperienced prosecutors. No other Ulster County agency is in this similar situation. The essential function and service of this office require that Ulster County obtain a building that is sufficient for all employees of the DA's office to be under one roof, with accessibility that meets the requirements of state and federal laws. That's the other issue that this building also solves. Right now, we have a whole floor that is not accessible for people with disabilities, and even then, it's just an unworkable situation. We're making the best of it. You'll see later on this month in our budget presentation, our office, despite these challenges, is still operating at an efficiency level that is beyond some of our peers. I was personally surprised to learn that we're indicting as many cases as Dutchess County. Our Kingston City Court is as busy as the city of Poughkeepsie, and we're doing great work. That's because of the partnerships we have with law enforcement. I spoke on it earlier today at the chief's meeting. I know members of law enforcement are also impacted by our space constraints, as are the COs. We're all crammed in the same space. There have been many occasions where a victim of crime knows that the person that they're testifying against is in the building while we're preparing for grand jury. And that is just, creates this other tension. So 15 Joyce Lane, I'll let Deputy County Exec more on the actual space, but we're very excited. And I know we've called through each of you to give you the overview about the space.
Yeah, so this space does offer a really unique opportunity for us as a county. As Saja said, the 15 Joyce Lane property will house the district attorney's office under one roof, which was huge. Really trying to find space that fits their needs with an office that's going to provide the privacy, confidentiality, but also on one floor was difficult. So we were very happy when this one came on the market. The other property is 9 Joyce Lane. That's a house that's located on the property. We're looking to use that house as a more comfortable space for some of our families who are coming through our crime victims unit. Our crime victims will also be working in a collaborative space within Joy's Lane. So this will house some space for them to really get to, you know, meet with people, have a more comfortable environment. Currently they are in 1 Pearl Street, which is a county owned property. That property does need a lot of work, and that property is also not great on the accommodation standpoint. It's 2 floors. It's one of the older buildings. We can't put an elevator shaft into that building. So this gives us a lot of access that we currently don't have within our current system. We will also be looking to move the FCAC out of rented space into this property, which will, again, achieve savings for us. Another unique thing about this property, I know some of you have toured, Gina, you've toured the space. There's a server room in the property, which is great for us. So we're going to be able to move some of our server equipment out of existing space that's not great into Joy's Lane to provide backup for our server functioning as well.
I just want to add that also, if I recall correctly, that this building is ADA compliant.
Yes.
And meets a lot of the green initiatives. Updating had been done prior to, so those are important things as well.
Sure. It was operated by an insurance company previously, so as we all know, insurance companies are very risk
averse. So it is a very safe level property, which is great.
Legislator Walz?
Just wanted to briefly say that when we toured the existing offices, mm-hmm. they were appalling. They were small. They were dingy. There was rare little if no natural light. Narrow hallways with file cabinets, musty, humid smelling, and I was like, I just couldn't believe that these folks were having to work under these conditions. And this really looks like a positive step.
So. President Maloney?
Yeah, look, I told Manny the other day talking to him that this is probably what we should have done all along, and that's very frustrating because just a couple of years ago, Jane, you weren't here, but your predecessor led this. I mean, we're describing things that we all voted for. I didn't vote for it. I was saying all the things you're saying. This is not the right location. We entered into a very expensive lease with a real estate agent that had both sides of the deal. It was, I toured it several times. They couldn't even tell me. We didn't have our own bathroom. We renovated the place. We put all these expensive doors and cameras in just to move out a year later. It's just insanity sometimes. And now this is just a great idea. It's so great. The old spaces suck. But just a year ago, we were voting for all these old spaces that made no freaking sense. But it is, look, this is fine, but it is frustrating for me that I spent months trying to get my colleagues to say no to a lease that we're now all saying, oh, that's disgusting. We got to get out of there. I don't know. But now this is good. I talked to Manny. He says he didn't like it, what we did a year or two ago, but he wasn't the top dog at the time. So he had no say in it, I guess. So the first thing he did when he did have a say was go and do what we should have done all along. So, but it is frustrating. There's no accountability ever. The guy that did all this is making 170 grand with Grubco and away we go. One quick question though. The house. What is the house being used at right now? And did we look to purchase it, or was it a package deal?
Package deal. So currently they're using it. Honestly, they're using it for space for insurance agents who are coming here to visit with clients. So it's set up more like bedrooms. No one's living there. No.
Everybody out.
No.
It's zoned as commercial.
Yeah.
And the house also presents an opportunity to create like a trauma-informed space for child victims. We previously were going to tour the CAC with this group, and I neglected to mention that the legislators also were very gracious in visiting. There's a lot of new ones that weren't around for the period that you're talking about, and you know, they recognized the problem and also were partners with us getting this done as quickly as it did. But the house really presents an opportunity to create a truly trauma-informed space for our child victims that are coming through.
And it also is sorry, it also is coming furnished, which is really important. Looking the layout of the space, as you saw, a lot of those cubicles that are in there are very unique and fit perfectly in that space, so it is also coming furnished, which is great.
Deputy Executive Capuano, do you know if by purchasing a building with green energy upgrades, would that be good for our 70 by 30 goals of 70% renewable by 2030?
Yes, and we will also be looking to do potential rooftop solar on this building as well. It has good angling for that as well.
Any other questions or discussion?
Sure. Sure. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of the Sheriff's Office and, of course, law enforcement. I can't understate how important it is for the DA's office to be in one building. Just like everyone else, we're suffering from recruitment. Be amazed what an environment, a different work environment will mean for that office. Good luck, and I think it's a great opportunity for all of us in law enforcement to lean forward, especially in the year 2024. So thanks.
Not going to watch Howard.
The sheriff's office will gain, I believe,
seven offices.
Six. Well, who's counting?
Six.
But counting or measuring.
One could be.
Any other discussion or questions? May I have a motion to adopt this resolution?
I'll make a motion.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Resolution. Resolution 533, approving the Ulster County Multiple Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan, Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management. Mr. Gap.
So this was paid for through a grant already, and this was a steering committee that included Department of Emergency Services, Environment, Planning, DPW, Mayor and Supervisors Association, and our consultant was Tetra Tech. So all 24 municipalities have signed into it, which the last time we did this, we got 100%. So we've made some vast improvement there, and it was a good job done.
Okay. Discussion or questions? Okay. A motion to adopt the resolution?
Cool.
Second? Clinton? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Resolution 534, authorizing amendments to contract 2023-682, the intermunicipal agreement with the City of Kingston for Special Operations Response Services, Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management. Sir?
Yes. So City of Kingston, we're looking to amend that to a one-year contract for 2025 and the remainder of 2024 for $5,000 for tactical EMS responses. Anytime that the sheriff's office goes out on a tactical type mission, KFD would supply the medical assistance, God forbid, that it's needed. And that's where we are.
Discussion or questions? Motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll make the motion.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Resolution 535, approving a training agreement with the City of New York and Ulster County Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management.
So last year, through the budget process for 2024, the Fire Advisory Board and the legislature granted $15,000 to be earmarked for firefighter training specifically. That was placed in our emergency services budget, and we are looking to spend or take $9,000 of that to participate in the City of New York's boat fire simulator. It's a very specialized piece of equipment that they maintain and they train us on. We would have availability for 24 firefighters from up and down the river to attend, and one-day training for 8 hours. And so that's what we're looking to do there.
I'll make the motion.
Second. Any discussion or questions? Okay. Motion to adopt.
Motion.
Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're going to go back to the first resolution that we talked about, Resolution 527, approving the execution of the contract, Stanley Woodstock. I obtained the information that this contract does not start until January of 2025. So if we decide and vote upon a motion to postpone, we should be okay with this. So is there anyone would like to make that motion to postpone?
I'll make a motion to postpone. I'll second it.
Okay.
In order to get additional information.
Okay. All those in favor of the postponement?
All right.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Motion is, or resolution is postponed. Just to make everyone aware, there's a resolution number 536. Which accepts $40,000 in state member item funding to go towards equipment for the Government Operations Center. It is on the Public Works Committee agenda and will be voted on at session. It is not on our agenda as it does not need to be. I wanted to make you aware of that.
I did want to mention one thing.
Yes.
About a resolution that we already voted on. But
okay.
My biggest concern about what we just heard from Legislator Maloney is with the school to prison pipeline, sometimes it's profitable to have more beds filled. I often hear about the prison industrial complex and the fastest growing industry in the U.S. being prisons. So to hear 99 beds being filled makes me happy because it might show also that we're minimizing crime in our society. So if we're forcing anyone into a program just for money, it concerns me. Just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Also, please note that on Monday, October 28th at 4 p.m., and Chambers, Explorer, will be the 2025 budget discussion. And if you haven't responded yet, if that's a good day and time for you, please do. We look forward to hearing everyone speak about their budget.
For new business, I just wanted to say congrats to Officer Chad Story for your FBI training. The article I read was amazing, so congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. Okay, anything else? Motion to adjourn?
I'll make the motion.
Second? Meeting adjourned. Thank you.